Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast. We're waiting for the Doom Patrol to come back, which is getting shorter and shorter every day.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, or you can reach us on the Facebook page. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yeah, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And you can get in touch with the show account on Twitter, which is Wilfred, the sentient show account, at WFDPod.
Yes, and this week we are taking a look at the legendary, slightly mind-bending miniseries of Flex Mentallo from 1996. And joining us this week is our very special guest and fan of said miniseries, Mr. Chris Sabella.
Hello. Yay.
Hooray. Thanks Yay. For coming back, Chris.
It's been, yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been almost a year, I realize.
Has it?
Okay. Yeah. A couple of months shy, but yeah, coming up to a year.
I've been following your career pretty closely, and you completed High Crimes, and then you just disappeared. You didn't do any more comics after yep. that.
Yeah, I figured that was it. That's all I needed.
Yeah, you know, one and done. It's good enough.
Sure. Just go out on top.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You want to take us through a little bit of what you've been up to since we last talked?
Let's see. Well, my creator-owned book, Welcome Back, came out, and we are now wrapping up the last issue. I think it wraps up tomorrow, like goes to the printer and everything. So there's that. I finished writing Escape from New York, and that went to 16 issues.
Which is a big run.
Yeah, that's my longest run in comics so far. So so far, so good.
Did Snake yeah. get out of New York?
He did.
Oh, good.
Twice.
Right. Wow.
Because he goes back to New York.
Whoa.
It's a long story. You'll have to read the book to really get it. Otherwise, we'll just take up the whole show with me explaining it.
Right.
So, yeah, now I have a new creator-owned book called Heartthrob that Robert Wilson is drawing and Nick Filardi's coloring, and it's a 70s crime romance story about heart transplants and possibly ghosts.
Who's publishing that one, Chris?
That's out from Oni Press. The first issue just came out like 3 weeks ago or so. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're chugging along. And then I got this stupid Clown Motel thing that I did last time we talked. So that's a thing that is plagued me ever since.
I was going to say.
I've just learned to accept it and embrace it. Right. And now it's, you know, it's part of my CV. So, yeah, that's working out well.
Do you want to unpack that one for the listeners, Chris? You know,
sure.
Mike and I know about the Clown Motel, but I'm not sure if everyone else out there does.
Well, the Clown Motel is a clown-themed motel in a town called Tonopah, Nevada. And it's in the center of Nevada. There's nothing around it for like 200 miles. And it's next to an abandoned graveyard. Mm. And there's a silver mine that went dry like back in the like 20s, also in town. So I went and I lived there for a month. I had a Kickstarter campaign to fund me going to do this. I lived there basically for the entire month of October, and now I'm finishing up writing a book about what happened during those 30 days. And yeah, you know, just enjoying the glow that comes with being marginally famous for something really stupid.
Yeah, following your Twitter through that time, it looked like it was some sort of cross between Breaking Bad and a circus.
Yeah, I think of it as like Breaking Bad and like Mulholland Drive or something. Like, yeah, it was a trip, and I get to keep reliving it because I have to finish writing this stupid book. So it's like I'm just reliving it over, except, you know, in deeper examination this time.
Yeah, I'm not sure all of our listeners would be aware, but I actually went in on the Kickstarter and got the reward to do a Skype chat with you, and you very kindly gave me a tour of the graveyard, which was wow.
Yep.
And, you know, a bit of a look at the hotel itself. And, yeah, you're a braver man than I am, Mr. Sabella. I will give you that much.
Wow. One day I'd like to Skype with Chris Sabella. But, yeah, well.
Well, yeah, you follow your dreams. I'm living proof. You never know what will happen.
You can make it happen, too.
Dream big, Paul. Dream big.
I will. What about you, Mike? How was your week in comics?
It was pretty good. Some good reads, especially from Marvel. There was Unbeatable Squirrel Girl came out and was actually like a choose-your-own-adventure book, which I would not have thought was possible, but it actually worked, and it was hilarious, and I really enjoyed that. And Miss Marvel was also a highlight, as well as the final issue of Snyder and Capullo's Batman run. That was really good fun. And, of course, I went and saw Captain America Civil War, and that was a lot of fun. Great comic book action movie. And
I saw that too. That was fantastic. Yeah, should we talk about it extensively while Chris cringes?
No, let's not.
It comes out here in like 2 days.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So I will say I enjoyed it more than Batman vs. Superman. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, what about you, Paul? What's been happening with you?
This week my daughter shoved a manga in front of me, so I went, you know, international for a bit, and I read One Punch Man. It's the story of a guy who's lost his job, disenfranchised, has nothing to do, and he sees a crab monster bullying a guy with a kid with a cleft chin that looks like a huge bum, and he decides to get involved, and then he discovers he has the ability to fight crime with one punch, and it's pretty crazy stuff.
Right.
You know, he trains so hard, all his hair falls out, and then it's really funny. Like, right. It's a really funny manga. Like, there's a scientist who's created this formula to turn his little brother into a big strong man, and he gives it to his brother, and his brother grows to like 500 meters tall, and then this scientist rides around on his shoulder getting him to smash cities with one punch, and then One Punch Man gets on the other shoulder, and the scientist yells, "Kill that guy on your shoulder," and then the monster kills the scientist instead, and things like that. It's
right. Okay,
yeah. Cool. But very good. I couldn't tell you who drew it or wrote it, but it's out there. It's the new hotness in manga, I believe, at the moment.
So, okay.
And, yeah, I'd be back for volume two.
Wow. Holy jeez. Anything exciting in your week specifically, Chris?
No, nothing tremendously exciting. I've just been working a lot trying to get stuff done. I'm going to go live in Ohio for a month, so that's a thing that's coming up.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, write comics and finish this book, and it's pretty boring.
Well, other than your fascinating tweets about the Ohio housing situation and
yes,
how much that costs. Jeez.
It's very exciting around here.
Yeah. Anyway, hey Paul, what's that ticking?
Ah, it sounds like the doom clock.
It is. Hooray.
Hey.
So, the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had was issue 22, volume 5 from Giffen and Clark. Cover dated July 2011, going on sale May 4th of that same year. So, it has been 5 years since we had a Doom Patrol book.
5 years?
Yep. Thankfully, we've only got a few months to wait for the next one now. So, yeah.
That's a David Bowie song.
Is it?
It's like a David Bowie song called 5 years. It's great. Anyway.
Okay. I have to ask, Chris, what was your reaction to the news of the Gerard Way, Nick Darrington book being announced?
I am happy about it. I'm also kind of annoyed because I would really like to do that. So it's both, yeah, love and hate. But again, like every time I've broached the subject, I would not know what to do. I feel like that book has already achieved perfection. So really, like, nobody should mess with it at all. Like, it should just, it ended at issue 60, and then that was it. Nothing else happened.
Right.
It was just over.
Okay. I might have to recheck my collection on that. But anyway, the last appearance we had of the team was only 38 weeks ago, so just over 9 months, in two different comics. They were All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, back in 2002, for the princely sum of $2.50, you could get issue 8 of Doom Patrol Volume 3 from the Arcudi Huat run. And that issue was titled But When I Wake, and it showed Robot Man coming to terms with the people that had brought him back from the quote-unquote dead, and the team learnt a lot more about their freaky new teammate, Ava, who had some weird alien thing, which I won't spoil because we'll get there one day. But yeah, it was good fun. And anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
And when
In 1994, Mark Waid, Brian Augustine, and Barry Kitson began exploring the beginnings of the world's greatest superhero team over an epic 12-issue comic maxi series.
And yes, we've just begun.
That team was the Justice League of America, and that comic was JLA Year One. In 2016, 8 podcasts will come together to cover this series in a single month. That month is JL May. Featuring the Fire and Water Podcast, The Power of Fishnets, Waiting for Doom, The Lantern Cast, Supermates Podcast, The Idlehead of Diabolu, Comic Reflections, and Views from the Long Box. Each podcast will cover one or two issues of JLA Year One, and then coverage will move from show to show. It all starts in the Fire and Water Podcast with issues 1 and 2.
Yes, we've just begun.
JL May, an epic month for an epic series. Available where you find all good podcasts.
Shall we have a quick word from one of our sponsors? We don't have sponsors, but other podcasts that we enjoy who we work with.
Insert promo here.
Happy.
Yeah, so profesh, as they say in the industry.
Aquaman and Firestorm fighting crime together. Soak them down
or burn them up.
No one does it better. Whenever you find trouble, they'll always be there to catch them in a bubble
or even torch their hair.
They stand for truth and justice
in sea, on land,
in air. Aquaman and Firestorm, they make a super pair.
The Fire and Water Podcast, celebrating Aquaman, King of the Seven Seas, and Firestorm, the Nuclear Man.
Available at Fire and Water Podcast, Aquaman Shrine, Firestorm Fan, and on iTunes and Stitcher.
I'm one of your hosts, the Irredeemable Shag, here to talk about Firestorm. Along with me is my co-host, Rob Kelly, here to talk about some guy that talks to fish.
Really? You're going to pull this crap during the promo? It's bad enough. I have to put up with your shenanigans every...
Today on Doomsplaining, we're looking at the fabulous Flex Mentallo series, which came out in 1996. Now, there's a bit of a story behind this because it was one of the first major works by Frank Quitely in comics. Mm. It was long planned by Grant Morrison, and no one really knew who Frank Quitely was when this was coming. I think he'd done Batman the Scottish Connection with Alan Grant, and that was about the only thing that had happened at this point. And it came out a fair bit after the end of the Doom Patrol, of the Doom Patrol run. And it picks up with Flex Mentallo. But one of the things that happened about this was a few years after it came out, or probably about a year after it came out, there was a fan of the series who called Ken Kniesel. I may be butchering his surname there, but he contacted the Charles Atlas Foundation, who did the, you know, Hero of the Beach ads originally in comics, and said, wow, I really, you know, interested in your products. And, you know, did you know about this comic? And he was a fan of the comic, and he ended up kicking off a court case. So this Ken, thanks Ken, he ended up getting this comic caught up in legal wranglings for a long, long time. And it took forever for Doom Patrol trades to come out featuring Flex Mentallo because of that. And this the collection I have of Flex Mentallo only came out in 2012 when all the court stuff sort of died down. So interesting story. But obviously it's over now and everybody's got what they want, which is why we can see Flex Mentallo on the promos for Jared Way's Doom Patrol. So exciting. So, but yes, Jared, Flex Mentallo, not Jared Way, he is a muscle man of mystery. So, and he wears a leopard spotted pair of swimmers and boots, and he fights crime by flexing and using his hero halo. So when he flexes, the words Hero of the Beach appear behind him, and that can have various effects like dampening explosions or making people get blown backwards, etc. And this was his miniseries. So, What's it about?
Well,
it's about I think my favorite thing about it is that it is so much about comics, and it's very much about like the role that comics plays in our life, and is also kind of a reaction to, you know, basically all the like super darkening of comics that happened post Dark Knight. And, you know, as usual, it's a very, like, autobiographical Grant Morrison work, it feels like. I don't know how autobiographical. I don't know if he drew naked superheroes and then masturbated to them. But that feels like a detail that, like, he didn't just pull out of thin air. So
he at least thought of it.
Yes, he considered it.
I did wonder reading this because one of the characters in this, Wallace Sage, goes through a bit of a drug-fueled crisis, shall we say. And I was wondering if Morrison went through some sort of personal crisis along the similar lines. As you said, Chris, that he drew inspiration from, because, yeah, that's... I'll admit, I read this for the first time ever today, so it's still freshly damaging my brain in one way. But... yeah, it was not what I was expecting at all. I was expecting a far more straight-up superhero adventure thing. But, of course, I should have realized it's got Morrison involved. What was I thinking? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, straight up, the art in this by Frank Quitely is incredible.
Yes.
Yeah, it is so well done. And his creativity... He just sort of emerged in American comics fully formed as an epic talent. And I mean, it's obviously he really came to prominence when he did New X-Men, but people who knew about this comic before that, you know, were already on to him as So I think when he came onto New X-Men, that's when the back issues of Flex Mentallo became very hard to find suddenly. But yeah, I actually think this as a piece of work is superior to pretty much everything he's done, probably except for We Three and All-Star Superman, I would say. But it's magnificent. I mean, he brings to life the imagination of Morrison in such a vivid way. And particularly because this comic is all about different layers of reality. Like it's got you know, Flex Mentallo is a fictional character who's come to life and he's in a world, and then we sort of extract from that and we see a comic writer who's sort of not doing well now, and he may be, as you say, maybe taking too many drugs and trying to kill himself, and he's talking to someone on the phone. But these realities sort of mix and flow in amongst each other, so it's really hard. There isn't a through line as to who's talking at any given time. Like, it sort of changes, and he's going, and then it turns out that the real world, the drab, horrible world, is actually revealed to be a fantasy as well. You know, and it's one thing I found in a review that I read a long time ago. It basically said that it has a structure that shows you comics through the ages. So the first issue is really the golden age, where you got Flex as, you know, the pure hero, looking to solve a mystery. It's all very straightforward, and why are there fake bombs being left around, and what does the fact have to do with everything? And you know, it even shows little bits of origins that match Superman and Captain Marvel. And then in the second issue, it's very Silver Age, because you've got sort of science heroes and villains. Outer space becomes a thing.
That scene with the astronaut telling his story to Flex in the bar. That's a little bit gross, but funny.
Yeah, and then in the third issue, it's straight up, the gritty 80s. Like, you've got sort of right down to a Dark Knight Returns homage cover, which has a fake signature on the...
I thought for the longest, like, I had to track down this series by single issues, and it took me, a couple of years. And when I got that one, I was like, wow, is this actually science? Like, and I had to, like, hold it up to the light to make sure. that was pretty cool.
Yeah, but that whole issue, it's full of, sexual fantasies and darkness and, the grim and gritty sort of gone wrong. And Morrison isn't just doing this for shock. He's actually, the whole narrative through is about, imagination and the way people decide that it's good or bad. And I think the fourth issue is really what's the hope for the future in comics, and and it's filled with little pearls of wisdom, like realism isn't pessimism, everything being miserable doesn't make it more real. What's wrong with imagination? And imagination can liberate you and save you and save the world, and there's all this fabulous stuff. And I think there's a real subtext of this is a bit of a rebuttal to the Crisis on Infinite Earths, because before the Crisis you had all these different, the multiverse with all these types of worlds, and you get silly characters and fun characters. You had Captain Carrot, you had, Shazam family and all this sort of stuff. And it all sort of got boiled down into a new universe, which was probably a little less crazy, and hey, we're going to redo things, and they're going to be a bit more realistic now. And I think Morrison is sort of railing against that in this book, where he's saying, a lack of imagination does not equal maturity.
As I was reading this, it reminded me a lot of the stuff he did in Multiversity, the series that came out last year, with the characters in the book interacting with the readers, and they're also being parallel Earths and multiverses and that. So it's clearly a subject that's dear to his heart. So,
well, and you've read his Animal Man run, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, basically like a dude dealing with the breakup of him and the multiverse. Morrison took that really hard, because he's covered it several times now. Like this, he was not a fan of Crisis, I don't think.
So. I'm pretty sure he wasn't.
And it comes up in like Seven Soldiers and Invisibles too, that fiction is freeing and liberating, and and making things more realistic. Means you're squashing imagination. And that's one thing I think Morrison never does, is squash his own imagination in what he brings to the table.
God, no. So, Chris, I know when we last spoke and we were discussing this miniseries, you were super excited to come back and chat about it. And I'm interested to know, what was it about the miniseries that grabbed your attention and rocked your world?
I don't know. I feel like generationally, like, it really speaks to me. Like, this whole, there's so much in there about, you know, growing up with the threat of nuclear war constantly around you. And like I remember that vividly as a kid, like that being a thing where, like, me and my friends all thought, like, oh, we're all going to die someday. Like, because literally everything kept talking about, like, well, the nukes are going to drop at some point. So, yeah. So there's a lot of that that just, like, speaks to me on a personal level. But, like, yeah, the idea of, like, Morrison basically explains, like, what comics are, or he gives his best sort of operating theory. And I think it's a really, you know, the whole idea of, like, fiction as a, you know, an alternate dimension. I don't know. There's just, the thing that I love so much about Grant Morrison is, like you said, like, he's never short of ideas, and, like, he can put more ideas into a single issue than, you know, a lot of writers can put into a whole series. And especially, you know, on this one, like, he's just, and there's just, like, so much, and it's, you know, it's funny and it's sad and I don't know, like, it really feels, and especially Quietly's art is just so amazing that, like, it's such a complete package of a book. Like, there's nothing wrong with that book at all. Like, and it's not an easy book. It challenges you. It makes you think about, you know, what's going on and sort of what level everything exists at. And, but it's still, you know, it's still a very pretty, wacky, superhero book. And, like, you know, you could just read that without having ever read any of Doom Patrol and it would still be a really good story. But I think, like, if you've really dived into Doom Patrol, then that book pays off a lot more. Like, not even just, like, the Wally Sage stuff, but, you know, all the sort of, yeah, sort of, like, dredging out, like, where all this weirdness actually comes from.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And Wally Sage is a character in the book. There seems to be, like, there's a gritty, real world Wally Sage with the drugs, and then there's, you know, it seems to be another version of Wally Sage who actually did the Flex Mentello comic, and there's reference to Wally Sage dying in Flex Mentello's arms, which happened in the Doom Patrol comic.
Yeah.
And there's quite a long text piece, which is sort of a fictional history of the Flex Mentello comic, and that has a sort of another version of Wally Sage in it. Like, there's a, you know, like, who is Wally Sage? And there seems to be conflicting versions of him in all of this, and that's, I think, one of the hints that it's, you know, he's fictional too. Like, oh, this is heavy stuff, isn't it? I'm talking about a fictional character. That's fictional.
Yeah, I did find it to be quite a dense read. There, as you said, Chris, there's so much in each issue to stop and think about. And it wasn't until, you know, I took a break between the third and the fourth issue to kind of soak it all in that, you know, it kind of dawned on me, okay, he's talking about the different, you know, ages of comic bookdom, like Golden Age, Silver Age, and then the when things got gritty and dark and sexier. And but yeah, just sort of rethinking what I just read, it was like, man, he hits you with so much stuff in just one issue. It's just, it's almost nonstop. But
yeah,
and in some ways, I don't know if that's a bad or a good thing, but it's certainly, it's nice to read something that makes you stop and think, even if it is, you know, it's as you said, it's about comics and, you know, their history and how they've changed over the years and how they affect people and how people interact with them. But yeah, it's been a long time since a comic has made me stop and think like that, which is great.
Yeah
And there's so much metaphor in this that I'm probably seeing metaphors that aren't there, like the cop Harry, he's before his wife died, he kept replacing her dead goldfish with a new one. And it's, you know, is that what the superhero world has been giving us in comics for years? You know, the like the goldfish is dead and they just keep giving us a new one and pretending it's, you know, the same one.
Yeah. he changed the fish more than he changed the water in the bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. The bit where there's the black mentality which makes people have a coma and, you know, it's, Harry finds the man in the moon holding it and says, I thought he had coal in his hand before he disappeared. Look, it's a diamond. And it's like, you know, one person's view of something say, well, this is crap. Could be another, a diamond if you look at it a different way.
Mm.
Things yeah. like, oh, it's too heavy. I'm sorry. I've read it about four times and I think I've got about 25% of what's in there into my brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Take pity on me because I've only just read the damn thing.
Give us a 3,000-word essay.
Yeah, you have so many rereads ahead of you now, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were reluctant to read it, weren't you, Mike?
A little bit. I can't quite explain why, but it wasn't something... Whereas, Chris, you were adamant you had to track it down in single issues. For me, it was kind of always just like, oh, it's just like a spin-off from Doom Patrol, and I'll get to it one day. You know, I won't really bother right. with it. But then, thankfully, Paul, you gifted me the four issues, which I still appreciate very much. And having read them now, I'm like, why did I wait so long? What was wrong with me? God. I guess, in one sense, I might possibly maybe be suffering from a little bit of Morrison burnout, particularly after Multiversity. But now, having read this, I want to go back and look through Multiversity again because I'm finding similar ideas with multiverses and, you know, different ways of showing superheroics in general. So, yeah. So, a bit reluctant, but I'm really glad that I did now. So, but yeah, it's so dense. It's so dense, but worth it. And it definitely needs to be read more than once. So, yeah, it's I will say thank God for the Quietly art. That really does help because it's so good.
Yeah. It's funny though. I think Morrison really loves the Silver Age, but he celebrates it by bringing imagination into, you know, new thing in new ways. He doesn't retell Silver Age stories very much, whereas a lot of the people who don't like Morrison, that's precisely why they don't like him, because he doesn't do traditional stories that are comforting and like what it's gone before. So interesting. But, I mean, he loves the Silver Age. But what he takes away from it is, you know, don't limit yourself and say this is too silly to put in a comic or this is unrealistic, you know. Go nuts. That's his motto, I'd say.
So, Chris, has this series in any sort of way affected how you approach writing in comics?
No, I think it's only in a like very vaguely aspirational way in that like I hope to someday like write something as amazing as this, but like yeah, I mean books like these just feel like on such a whole other level that it's hard to like I can see what he's doing, but just like, you know, it's like, I don't know, like you give six different people a set of Legos and like each person is going to churn out something different and you don't know, like, and this all comes back to what Flex Mentallo is about. It's like, you don't know where they get their ideas from and you don't know how they come up with this. And like, there's so much in this book that's just like so ballsy and so like, I don't give a shit what you think about this book. Like, this is what I want to do. And, but it's still like really rock star cool too. Like, you know, as deeply nerdy as it is, like, I mean, I still, there's in issue 4, the line, like, prepare to become fictional is like, that is like, to my mind, one of the greatest lines in comics ever written. Like, I love that line so much. So yeah, it's really just like this and Doom Patrol are both books that, you know, just like really challenge me to like, if anything, like it's sort of, if it's given me permission to sort of take things as far as I can. Mm-hmm. I think I could still take things a lot further.
Yeah.
So you know, every time I read one, it's like, oh, like, yeah, I guess you're doing okay stuff, but, you know, you could be doing something like Flex Mentallo, which, you know, is a DC book. Like, that's the craziest thing, is like, this thing is full of drugs and like weird porno superheroes. Yeah. I mean, it's a Vertigo book, so I mean, it's a little, but still, like,
yeah, I have like, to admit, in that third issue, which is all about, you know, the comics becoming darker and grittier and sexier. Look, I'm an open-minded kind of guy, and there was nothing overtly graphic in that issue, but I felt really uncomfortable after that scene where he's trying to get through the nightclub, which is, you know, spelt K-N-I-G-H-T, which made me laugh. And there's all these superheroes engaging in sexual acts there. And again, you know, there's things shown and you get an idea as to what's going on. But again, nothing overtly graphic or, you know, gross or anything like that. But yeah, I just kind of felt really weird after reading that one. I was like, yeah, I think I need a break now before I finish it. And I can't explain why, but there's maybe I'm just not used to seeing that kind of being thrown in my face. Other than, I think the last time I saw anything like that, it made me think of the series The Boys, which was kind of secret.
Garth Ennis, yeah.
By Garth Ennis. And there was a story arc in that called Herogasm, which was far more over the top. But yeah, there was something really unsettling about seeing this sex-filled superhero nightclub. And I can't quite explain why, but yeah, I literally put it down and said, okay, I need a breather before the final issue. It was really odd.
Yes, there is definitely some stuff in there. Wow.
Yeah, no, it's super exciting that, like, you know, like, I don't even know if a book like this could get made today. Like, it is so sort of, it speaks really to, like, where comics was at that point.
Yeah, definitely.
And it feels like it'd be a lot harder to get, like, oh, yeah, I want to do a book that explores, like, you know, how basically, like, some, like, a lot of superheroic stuff is, like, masturbation fodder for people. And, like, you know, like, people always talk about, you know, the weird, like, power fantasy stuff. But, like, Morrison took it to, like, such an extreme that you can't misinterpret his point. Like, he's very nakedly open about it.
And it's also very much about the DC universe more than any other, I'd say.
Yeah.
I mean, despite it not really having any recognizable characters, you know, there's sort of analogs of characters. Like,
yes.
In that sex scene, it looks like the Metal Men are involved at one point, and there's a plastic man and a woman.
What got to me. Because I recognize it's not those named characters, but they're very close. And maybe that's what I found a bit disturbing, that I was seeing a version of the DC universe getting it on. And maybe that just didn't sit right with me. I don't know. I don't mean to sound like an old prude, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean,
you did it.
And I think as an adult, you forget how weird some of these characters are, just in their, you know, design and, you know, powers. Some of the DC characters are so weird. And I think, you know, that sort of gets lost a bit as you get older and older, and you don't think, you know, you don't come at it with fresh eyes and take it as it is.
True.
You know too much about the history of everything at some point that it's familiar and comforting instead of strange and bizarre. Mm. Like, I remember that as a kid. I'd see comics at the newsagent and, you know, they'd go, oh, that looks freaky. I'm freaked out by that. And that was just my imagination firing off what I saw on the cover.
Yeah,
you know, without even opening it.
Yeah. Well, you look, DC had things like, you know, a hero called Deadman, you know, who looks like he's a bad guy. I mean, what the hell is that all about, you know?
Yeah, so,
no, don't get me started on Deadman.
Oh, what?
You want to write Deadman?
So I took part in the DC development group, which is this class that Scott Snyder taught.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I wasn't really super public with it, but, you know, they held it. It was from, like, January to the end of March.
Okay.
And it's a program where, like, they teach you, like, you know, like, how to sort of tell the kind of stories that you've been telling, but in this, you know, sort of larger than life, big two sort of way. Right. And part of the thing was that we each of us had to write two number one scripts. And my first script was like, no question, it was Dead Man. Because I don't know if you've ever read those Mike Barron Dead Man books.
No.
Like Kelly Jones drew them.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
They were sort of right at the start of Vertigo.
Yeah, and they're super disturbing looking, and they're really weird, like existential things, but
and like creepy circuses.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I was like, oh, I'm all over Dead Man, and like it's like one of the things that nobody will ever see it, but it's one of the scripts that like I am like most happy with, like, and wow. it's just this thing that like exists on my hard drive now. And I'm just sort of biding my time, hoping I get a chance to pitch on Dead Man.
Wow.
What was your second one?
It was going to be Doom Patrol, but then I lost my nerve, so I went with Suicide Squad.
Oh, nice. So, wow.
But yeah, I wanted to show off, like, hey, I can write a team book, too. And, like, Doom Patrol was on my list, but every time I got near it, I was just like, I don't know what the cliff's in a mental hot. No, wait, no, we've already done that. Like, it's just, I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to expunge, like, all, you know, the Morrison run from my head. It's just tattooed on there. So they're wrecked for me, except as a reader.
That's an interesting question. If you had to be one, if you could be any person from the Doom Patrol in Morrison's run, which character would you want to be? Because I can't think of many that I'd want to be.
Of the Doom Patrol or of the...
Yeah, like if you could be Cliff Steele or Rebus or Crazy Jane.
I guess Crazy Jane.
Yeah.
I know that's a really... I mean, they're all messed up choices. Like,
yeah.
I really like Crazy Jane's power set, for one. And, you know, she kind of gets a happy ending. Or no, maybe I'd be Danny the Street. Can I be Danny? Yeah.
Danny would be my pick.
Wow, really, Paul?
I'd like to be happy. That would be really important in that if you're going to be weird, you want to be happy as well, I reckon.
Okay. I will admit to identifying with Cliff Steele no matter what run he's in, purely because he's just... He's had bad, terrible, horrible luck like the rest of them have, and he's not quite a man, and he's not quite normal, but he's kind of indestructible, and he keeps losing limbs and having terrible things happen to him, but he's always there for his friends and does the best he can no matter what the situation is. So there's and getting even deeper, I think there's something about my fear of mortality, shall we say, if we're going to overshare. You know, he's a human brain trapped in a body, so he's kind of immortal as well, but he has all this crap to deal with still. So, yeah, I would always be Robot Man no matter what. And now I've made it awkward.
Turning into quite the therapy session today.
A little bit. You're welcome, listeners.
Any last words on Flex Mentallo?
I really like that in issue 2, where he's fighting the multi-head guy, yes, that one of the guy's heads is like lamb.
Yes.
Like, there's all the other ones have these weird magical properties, and then there's lamb.
A ball of lamb.
Yeah, just a floating ball, sphere of meat.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, there's something... I'm trying to think what else, if I have any, I don't know. Yeah, there's too much. Like, you could do a podcast, Jeff, where you talk about Flex Mentallo.
Yeah. I like the hero names that Morrison just tosses out there as if they're, you know, like most writers would hang on to these names because you could use them over and over again. And he's just creating, you know, Mini-Miss and Nano-Man and Limbo. And he's just...
Yeah.
I can chuck these ideas around, and I've got more ideas coming. It's okay.
Mm, yeah.
Mike?
For me, it's so dense and it needs more than one reading, I think. But it's a great story. But if you are going to pick it up for the first time, don't expect a straight superhero story, because there's so much more to it than that. And it's a love letter to comics in general and the history of comics, but done in a very Morrison way, because it's Grant Morrison, obviously, and it will stop and make you think about what you're reading, which is nice for a change. And I kind of regret that it's taken me this long to get round to it. So, yeah. And Frank Quitely art. Oh, my God. It's amazing. It's so much detail in every panel. It's fantastic.
Okay, we might wrap it up there and have another ad for a different podcast, eh?
Okay.
Black Canary.
I'll need a sparring partner.
I'm Zatanna. What do you care about some leggy dame in nylons? Or have I answered my own question?
Black Canary and Zatanna, together in one podcast. I'm Ryan Daly, and I've got a thing for superheroes in fishnet stockings. That's why I started Power of Fishnets, the Black Canary and Zatanna podcast. Join me every 2 weeks as I celebrate the blonde bombshell and the mistress of magic in their exciting adventures published by DC Comics. Power of Fishnets. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Time for the Mailbag of Doom. And we were asking people last week, what comic do you lend out the most? And we heard from a few people. So we heard from at Tater Pie, who's called My Name is Bucky at the moment. And she said, Phonogram. Well, I wish I lived near Tater Pie so I could borrow Phonogram, because I've never read that one.
Same. We then heard from TMG Cast at TMG underscore cast, and they said, I stopped lending when 50% of my Preachers and 90% of Sandman never came back.
Ooh, that's a lot.
That's understandable. Yeah.
We heard from Bob Gar Ornelis, who's at Slurmo, and he said, nobody wants to borrow anything, and when they do, I pretty much kiss it goodbye. Not complaining, though. Everything can be replaced.
Fair call.
Yeah.
Jacob Edwards at Man Punch It. He said Superman Birthright.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one. I have actually lent that to Rift once, I think. We heard from Ostracus One, who's Wick Meant Vale There on Twitter. He keeps anagramming his real name. So that's Kevin, our good friend Kevin. And he said the Starman Omnibus editions. Back when I did that sort of thing, I guess I need more friends who are into comics. What a classy thing to lend people. They're great. I really like them. They're good.
We heard from Bud A, who is at ArbardF09. And he said, mainly alternative comics. Try Peter Baggy's Everyone is Stupid Except for Me. And he gave us a cool little image from that. So I've never read anything from Peter Baggy. So I'll have to try something. Yeah, I know. I'm a loser. So. It's like it said, everyone is stupid except for him.
It's not superheroes, man. It's bullshit.
Next.
We heard from Ange, and he said mostly because it crosses over to my non-comic friends, I'd say Watchmen, but there are others I'd like to lend more.
We then heard from Femmes in the Fridge at Femmes in Fridges, and she said Wick Div Volume 1 and Princess Volume 1, both good choices. I've enjoyed both of those.
When I saw her message, I went and reserved Wicked and Divine number 1 from the library, because I've never read it.
Ooh, you're in for an interesting story, let me tell you.
Good stuff.
Yeah. We then got an email from Martin Gray, and he says, "Hello, terrible trio. Just thought I'd email because it's nice to get letters, isn't it? The latest show was spiffy as expected. Regarding the very reasonable question of why Mento needed a helmet to translate tiny speak and Rita didn't, could it be because she has an elastic brain? Her brain automatically rearranges a little to act as a babel fish, and she's so freaking awesome she doesn't even need to think about it. I thought this was a great original idea until I began to suspect someone else had had it previously. Not that I remember whom it concerned. Plastic Man? Probably Reed Richards. I don't know. I'm not Rita Farr with an amazing elastic brain."
So, can I jump in? I think it's Martian Manhunter who reconfigures his brain to do different things in some comics.
Maybe. Martin continues, "Or maybe I am the first person to funk it up. My favorite bit of comics, Elastic Brain Business, saw Chameleon Boy of the Legion of Superheroes, points for his real name, guys. He moved his brain to his shoulders or somewhere else because he rightly anticipated being shot in the head. Clever old Cam." Or is it Cham?
Cam.
There we go. As for question of the week,
I can take that. Reap Daggle.
Right.
That's his real name.
Okay.
Yes.
As for question of the week, my most lent out comic book is not applicable. Have you learnt nothing? You don't lend out comics because if you actually get them back, they'll be covered in baby sick or cat vomit. If I think someone will enjoy something, I'll just buy them it, and what I buy depends on the person and their interests. I've heard a lot of people in the past saying Watchmen, but that's a terrible choice for an inexperienced comics reader. If you don't know the archetypes being twisted or the formal structures being played with, you'll not get the most out of it. It'll likely seem a simple, very serious book with pleasingly stiff art and an awful lot of tedious pirate palaver. Wow. Anyway, have a great weekend, your little English chum, Martin. Thanks, Martin.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
So, are you a lender of comics, Chris?
Not anymore. Like, that's definitely, and any time I've lent books, I sort of quietly wave goodbye to them. Because I know that's just, and I keep meticulous records, and I will remind people, but you know, just life gets in the way. So I'm just like, no, like, you know, clearly you don't want to read it that badly if you're not going to go shell out for it. So,
yeah.
What about you, Mike?
As an adult, hell no, no way, never, ever, ever. As a kid, yes, I did lend a quote-unquote friend some comics, and then there was a disagreement over the actual legalities and what borrowing a book actually meant, and I never saw them back again, and that warped me and twisted me against ever lending anyone anything ever again. The end.
Wow. I must have a better class of friends than you guys. Usually if I don't know someone very well and they're interested in reading a comic, I will lend them something that I won't be – it won't kill me if it comes back a bit damaged, and then see how it comes back, and then I'll, you know, open the gates if that happens. But, I've lent out probably the thing I lend out the most these days is Why the Last Man.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got quite a few people who have read through the whole thing because I lent it all to them. But way back in the day, it was usually Dark Knight Returns. That was the go-to. And my copy of Dark Knight Returns is pretty tatty because of that. But, I mean, like, I've got – like, Riff's a great friend, and he's read all my Green Lantern trades, you know, right through, you know, Hal Going Nuts and Kyle Rayner coming in and then all the Blackest crap and all that. He's read all of them, and he keeps – borrowing things. He's actually got the Doom Patrol Showcase Volume 1 from me at the moment. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm quite happy to lend comics to certain people, but, yeah, it depends on the person. But there's so many cool things that people don't know about that it's really exciting to say, hey, look at this, you'll really like this. But, yeah, I mean, Martin is right that you do need to know what people like and not just, you know, don't lend, you know, the first person you meet Starman because they probably won't cope.
I've got to say, I've actually found over the last year or so, especially on Twitter alone, is where I found it to be a great source for new comics, and checking out new things, and you know, people doing web web comics and their own self-published stuff. You can find so much cool stuff online and on Twitter as well, and interact with writers and artists as well, which is a great way to discover more stuff. I mean, Chris, that's how I first found out about your stuff and first met you. So, you know, all praise Twitter.
Yeah, I would be lost without it.
Yeah, I got into High Crimes because of Twitter, I think. Like, so many people were saying it was, you know, such a good book, and they were right.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm also trying it out. Trying arrogance out.
How's that going for you, Chris?
I just started, like, the moment I said that, so pretty good.
Okay.
I like it.
Yeah,
you wear it well.
Good. Yeah.
I debuted it on your show.
Oh, so blessed. I look forward to future arrogant tweets from your good self, sir.
Oh, they're coming. They're coming.
Why have you unfollowed me?
Oh, dear. Okay, I think on that note, before Chris gets any more arrogant, we'll wrap it up there. As always, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And you can reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And next week, Paul, it's all happening for us with the big crossover.
Yeah, it's JL May, everybody. So at the time of this recording, the first part of JL May is out, and that's on the Fire and Water podcast, where they cover issue 1 and 2 of JLA Year 1. And I think after that, it moves to the Power of Fishnets for issues 3 and 4. And we will be coming back next week with issues 5 and 6. And then it's off to the Lantern cast after that, I think. Cool. And yeah, anyway, there's a checklist online. We will be tweeting about it over at the Fire and Water pages. They've got all the information. And to celebrate JLA Year 1, I'm going to ask everybody to give us the answer to what's your favorite maxi series in comics?
Cool.
Maxi series. And also, special shout out to Doug Zavisha, who sent us a picture of the tiny people from last issue, the comics we talked about last issue, where Rita shrank down onto Cliff's hand.
Yes.
They were blue, because we only had black and white copy, and they are blue. Apparently, these are guys with the side mullets.
Yes.
That's a side mullet.
It's like where you're bald on top, but you've still got long hair on the sides and the back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, we're all learning so much tonight. It's great.
Yeah. Now I know.
Yeah, but I think that's it for this show. Thank you, Chris, for coming. It was fantastic to have you with us.
Yeah, I look forward to being back in a year.
Yeah. Cool. Yes, thanks again, Chris, and thanks, Paul, and thanks all our listeners, and we'll catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Bye.
Bye.